Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a feature article by Florence et al. Management changes after echocardiography are associated with improved outcomes in critically ill children. Objectives: to evaluate management changes and outcomes in critically ill children after formal echocardiography. Design: retrospective cohort study between January 1, 2011 and December 31, 2020. Setting: tertiary care children's hospital. Patients: patients from 1 to 18 years old who had formal echocardiography within 72 hours of ICU admission and who were intubated and on vasoactive infusions at the time of the study. Patients were stratified into two cardiac function groups: 1, near normal cardiac function, and 2, depressed cardiac function. Methods: clinical variables were abstracted from the electronic medical record and placed in time sequence relative to echocardiography. Vasoactive and fluid management strategies in place before echocardiography were associated with markers of tissue perfusion and volume overload. Management changes after echocardiography were characterized and associated with outcomes. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: among patients eventually found to have depressed cardiac function, the use of vasoconstrictors was associated with worse lactate clearance and oxygen extraction ratio. Use of vasoconstrictors in this cohort was also associated with a more liberal fluid management strategy, evidence of increased lung water, and a worse SpO2 to FiO2. An echocardiogram demonstrated depressed cardiac function was likely to be followed by management changes that favored inotropes and more conservative fluid administration. Patients with depressed cardiac function who were switched to inotropes were more likely to be extubated and to wean off vasoactive support compared with those patients who remained on vasoconstrictors. In conclusion, among patients with depressed cardiac function, alterations in management strategy after echocardiography are associated with shortened duration of intensive care interventions. Abstract 2 is a feature article by Rodriguez et al. Rapid whole genome sequencing and clinical management in the PICU, a multicenter cohort from 2016 to 2023. Objectives: analysis of the clinical utility of rapid whole genome sequencing outside of the neonatal period is lacking. We describe the use of rapid whole genome sequencing in PICU and cardiovascular ICU or CICU patients across 4 institutions. Design: ambidirectional multi-site cohort study. Setting: 4 tertiary children's hospitals. Patients: children 0 to 18 years old in the PICU or CICU who underwent rapid whole genome sequencing analysis from May 2016 to June 2023. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: a total of 133 patients underwent clinical, phenotype-driven rapid whole genome sequencing analysis, 36 prospectively. A molecular diagnosis was identified in 79 patients, or 59%. Median age was 6 months, with an interquartile range of 1.2 months to 4.6 years. Median time for return of preliminary results was 3 days, with an interquartile range of 2 to 4 days. In 79 patients with a molecular diagnosis, there was a change in ICU management in 19 patients, or 24%, and some change in clinical management in 63 patients, or 80%. Non-diagnosis changed management in 5 of 54 patients, or 9%. The clinical specialty ordering rapid whole genome sequencing did not affect diagnostic rate. Factors associated with greater odds ratio of diagnosis included dysmorphic features with an odds ratio of 10.9 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.8 to 105, and congenital heart disease with an odds ratio of 4.2 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.3 to 16.8. Variables associated with greater odds of changes in management included obtaining a genetic diagnosis with an odds ratio of 16.6 and a 95% confidence interval of 5.5 to 62, and a shorter time to genetic result, with an odds ratio of 0.8 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.76 to 0.9. Surveys of pediatric intensivists indicated that rapid whole genome sequencing enhanced clinical prognostication with a p-value less than 0.0001 and contributed to a decision to consult palliative care with a p-value less than 0.02. Conclusions: in this 2016 to 2023 multiple PICU CICU cohort, We have shown that timely genetic diagnosis is feasible across institutions. Application of rapid whole genome sequencing had a 59% rate of diagnostic yield with a 95% confidence interval of 51 to 67% and was associated with changes in critical care management and long-term patient management. Abstract 3 is a feature article by Ahmed et al. Levetiracetam or phenytoin as prophylaxis for status epilepticus. Secondary analysis of the approaches and decisions in acute pediatric traumatic brain injury trial or ADAPT dataset from 2014 to 2017. Objectives: to compare levetiracetam and phenytoin as prophylaxis for the short-term development of status epilepticus during care of pediatric patients with acute severe traumatic brain injury or TBI. Design: non-pre-specified secondary analysis using propensity score matching. Setting: we used the Approaches and Decisions in Acute Pediatric TBI Trial or ADAPT dataset from 2014 to 2017. Subjects: patients less than 18 years old with Glasgow Coma Scale score less than or equal to 8 who received levetiracetam or phenytoin as a prophylactic anticonvulsant therapy. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of the 516 total patients who qualified for the case control study, 372 or 72.1% patients received levetiracetam and 144 or 27.9% received phenytoin. After propensity score matching, the pair-matched analysis with 133 in each group failed to identify an association between levetiracetam versus phenytoin use and occurrence of status epilepticus, 3.8% versus 0.8%, with a p-value equal to 0.22. The pair-matched analysis also failed to identify an association with mortality, including in-hospital, 30-day, and 60-day mortality. However, on closer inspection of the statistical testing, we cannot exclude the possibility that selecting levetiracetam rather than phenytoin for prophylaxis was associated with the following: up to a mean difference of 7.3% greater prevalence of status epilepticus, up to a mean difference of 13.9%, 12.1%, and 13.9% greater mortality during the hospital stay and 30 and 60 days after hospital arrival, respectively. Last, analysis of 6 months Glasgow Outcome Scale extended score in those without premorbid comorbidities, there was an association between favorable outcomes and use of phenytoin rather than levetiracetam prophylaxis. Conclusions. In ADAPT, the decision to use prophylactic levetiracetam versus phenytoin failed to show an association with occurrence of subsequent status epilepticus or mortality. However, we were unable to exclude the possibility that selecting levetiracetam rather than phenytoin for prophylaxis was associated with greater prevalence of status epilepticus and mortality. We are unable to make any recommendation about one prophylactic anticonvulsant medication over the other, but recommend that further larger contemporary studies in severe pediatric TBI are carried out. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation by Akiyama et al. Chest compression depth targets in critically ill infants and children measured with a laser distance meter, single center retrospective study from Japan, 2019 to 2022. Objectives. Current resuscitation guidelines recommend target chest compression depth of approximately 4 centimeters for infants and 5 centimeters for children. Previous reports based on chest CT suggest these recommended chest compression depth targets might be too deep for younger children. Our aim was to examine measurements of anterior-posterior chest diameter with a laser distance meter and calculate chest compression depth targets in critically ill infants and children. Design: a retrospective descriptive study. Setting: single center PICU, using data from May 2019 to May 2022. Patients: all critically ill children admitted to PICU and under 8 years old were eligible to be included in the retrospective cohort. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The chest anterior posterior diameter measurements using a laser distance meter are part of our usual practice in the PICU. Target chest compression depth and the overcompression threshold chest compression depth for each age group was calculated as 1/3 and 1/2 of anterior posterior diameter, respectively. In 555 patients, the median of the calculated target chest compression depth for each age group was as follows. For 0 to 2 months old, median chest compression depth was 2.7 centimeters with an interquartile range of 2.5 to 2.9 centimeters. For 3 to 5 months old, Median chest compression depth was 2.9 centimeters with an interquartile range of 2.7 to 3.2 centimeters. For 6 to 8 months old, median chest compression depth was 3.2 centimeters with an interquartile range of 3 to 3.5 centimeters. For 9 to 11 months old, median chest compression depth was 3.4 centimeters with an interquartile range of 3.2 to 3.6 centimeters. For 12 to 17 months old, median chest compression depth was 3.4 centimeters with an interquartile range of 3.2 to 3.6 centimeters. For 18 to 23 months old, median chest compression depth was 3.6 centimeters with an interquartile range of 3.4 to 3.8 centimeters. For 2 years old to less than 5 years old, median chest compression depth was 3.6 centimeters with an interquartile range of 3.4 to 4 centimeters. And for 5 years old to less than 8 years old, median chest compression depth was 4 centimeters with an interquartile range of 3.5 to 4.2 centimeters. Using guideline-recommended absolute chest compression depth targets, 4 centimeters for infants and 5 centimeters for children, 49% of infants between 0 and 2 months and 45.5% of children between 12 and 17 months would be overcompressed during cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Conclusions. In our cohort, the one-third chest compression depth targets calculated from anterior-posterior diameter measured by laser meter were shallower than the guideline-recommended chest compression depth. Further studies, including evaluating hemodynamics during cardiopulmonary resuscitation with these shallower chest compression depth targets, are needed. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation by Mastro Pietro et al. Clinical outcomes after tracheostomy in children with single ventricle physiology. Collaborative research from the Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society multicenter cohort from 2010 to 2021. Objectives. Multicenter studies reporting outcomes following tracheostomy in children with congenital heart disease are limited, particularly in patients with single ventricle physiology. We aim to describe clinical characteristics and outcomes in a multicenter cohort of patients with single ventricle physiology who underwent tracheostomy before Fontan operation. Design: multicenter retrospective cohort study. Setting: 21 tertiary care pediatric institutions participating in the collaborative research from the Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society. Patients: we reviewed 99 children with single ventricle physiology who underwent tracheostomy before the Fontan operation at 21 institutions participating in collaborative research from the Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society between January 2010 and December 2020, with follow-up through December 31, 2021. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Death occurred in 51 of 99 patients, or 52%. Cox proportional hazard analysis was performed to determine factors associated with death after tracheostomy. Results are presented as hazard ratios with 95% confidence intervals. Non-respiratory indications for tracheostomy had a hazard ratio of 2.21 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.14 to 4.32, and number of weeks receiving mechanical ventilation before tracheostomy had a hazard ratio of 1.06 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.02 to 1.11, and both were independently associated with greater hazard of death. In contrast, diagnosis of tricuspid atresia or Epstein's anomaly was associated with less hazard of death, with a hazard ratio of 0.16 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.04 to 0.69. Favorable outcome, defined as survival to Fontan operation or decannulation while awaiting Fontan operation with viable cardiopulmonary physiology, occurred in 29 of 99 patients, or 29%. Median duration of mechanical ventilation before tracheostomy was shorter in patients who survived to favorable outcome, 6.1 weeks versus 12.1 weeks with a p-value less than 0.001, and only 1 of 16 patients with neurologic indications for tracheostomy and 0 of 10 patients with cardiac indications for tracheostomy survived to favorable outcome. Conclusions. For children with single ventricle physiology who undergo tracheostomy, mortality risk is high and should be carefully considered when discussing tracheostomy as an option for these children. Favorable outcomes are possible, although thoughtful attention to patient selection and tracheostomy timing are likely necessary to achieve this goal. Abstract 6 is a neurocritical care article by Alcamo et al. Diagnostic identification of acute brain dysfunction in pediatric sepsis and septic shock in the electronic health record, a comparison of 4 definitions in a reference data set. Objectives. Acute brain dysfunction in pediatric sepsis has a prevalence of 20%, but can be difficult to identify. Our previously validated acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype used variables obtained from the electronic health record indicative of clinician concern for acute neurologic or behavioral change. We tested whether the acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype has better diagnostic performance to identify confirmed acute brain dysfunction than other definitions using the Glasgow Coma Scale or delirium scores. Design. Diagnostic testing in a curated cohort of pediatric sepsis and septic shock patients. Setting. Quaternary Freestanding Children's Hospital. Subjects. The test data set comprised 527 children with sepsis and/or septic shock managed between 2011 and 2021 with a prevalence of confirmed acute brain dysfunction of 30% and a pretest probability of 159 of 527. Measurements and main results. Acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype was based on use of neuroimaging, electroencephalogram, and/or administration of new antipsychotic medication. We compared the performance of the acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype with three GCS and delirium-based definitions of acute brain dysfunction. 1. Parule et al., 2. International Pediatric Sepsis Consensus Conference, and 3. Pediatric Organ Dysfunction Information Update Mandate. The post-test probability of identifying acute brain dysfunction was highest in acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype, which was 0.84, compared with other definitions. Acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype also had the highest sensitivity at 83% with a 95% confidence interval of 76 to 89% and specificity at 93% with a 95% confidence interval of 90 to 96%. The false discovery rate was lowest in acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype, 1 in 6, as was the false omission rate, 1 in 14. Finally, the prevalence threshold for the definitions varied, with the acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype being the definition closest to 20%. Conclusions. In our curated dataset of pediatric sepsis and/or septic shock, acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype had favorable characteristics to identify confirmed acute brain dysfunction compared with GCS and delirium-based definitions. The acute brain dysfunction computational phenotype can be used to further study the impact of acute brain dysfunction in studies using large electronic health datasets. Abstract 7 is a PCCM trial by Maya et al. High-flow nasal cannula versus nasal prong bubble continuous positive airway pressure in children with moderate to severe acute bronchiolitis, a randomized control trial. Objectives: to compare high-flow nasal cannula versus nasal prong bubble continuous positive airway pressure or bubble CPAP in children with moderate to severe acute bronchiolitis. Design: a randomized control trial was carried out from August 2019 to February 2022. Setting: pediatric emergency ward and ICU within a tertiary care center in India. Patients: children 1 to 23 months old with moderate to severe acute bronchiolitis. Intervention: comparison of high-flow nasal cannula with bubble CPAP using a primary outcome of treatment failure within 24 hours of randomization as defined by any of the following. 1. A 1-point increase in modified Woods clinical asthma score above baseline. 2. A rise in respiratory rate greater than 10 per minute from baseline. And 3. Escalation in respiratory support. The secondary outcomes were success rate after crossover, if any, need for mechanical ventilation, either invasive or non-invasive, local skin lesions, length of hospital stay, and complications. Results: in 118 children analyzed by intention to treat, high-flow nasal cannula with an N of 59 versus bubble CPAP with an N of 59 was associated with a lower failure rate, 23.7% versus 42.4%, a relative risk of 0.56, a 95% confidence interval of 0.32 to 0.97, and a p-value equal to 0.031. The Cox proportion model confirmed a lower hazard of treatment failure in the high-flow nasal cannula group with an adjusted hazard ratio of 0.48, a 95% confidence interval of 0.25 to 0.94, and a p-value equal to 0.032. No crossover was noted. A lower proportion escalated to non-invasive ventilation in the high-flow nasal cannula group versus the bubble CPAP group, 15.3% versus 39%, with a relative risk of 0.39, a 95% confidence interval of 0.2 to 0.77, and a p-value equal to 0.004. The high-flow nasal cannula group had a longer median duration of oxygen therapy and hospital stay. Median duration of oxygen therapy with high-flow nasal cannula was 4 days with an interquartile range of 3 to 6 days versus 3 days in the bubble CPAP group with an interquartile range of 3 to 5 days and a p-value equal to 0.012. The median duration of hospital stay for the high-flow nasal cannula group was 6 days with an interquartile range of 5 to 8.5 days versus 5 days in the bubble CPAP group with an interquartile range of 4 to 7 days and a p-value equal to 0.021. No significant difference was noted in other secondary outcomes. Conclusion. In children aged 1 to 23 months with moderate to severe acute bronchiolitis, the use of high-flow nasal cannula therapy as opposed to bubble CPAP for early respiratory support is associated with a lower failure rate and secondarily, a lower risk of escalation to mechanical ventilation. Abstract 8 is an online clinical investigation by Radman et al. Changes in inhaled nitric oxide use across ICUs after implementation of a standard pathway. Objectives. Inhaled nitric oxide is a selective pulmonary vasodilator. It is expensive, frequently used, and not without risk. There is limited evidence supporting a standard approach to initiation and weaning. Our objective was to optimize the use of inhaled nitric oxide in the cardiac ICU or CICU, PICU, and neonatal ICU or NICU by establishing a standard approach to inhaled nitric oxide utilization. Design: a quality improvement study using a prospective cohort design with historical controls. Setting: 407-bed freestanding quaternary care academic children's hospital. Patients: all patients on inhaled nitric oxide in the CICU, PICU, and NICU from January 1, 2017 to December 31, 2022. Interventions: unit-specific standard approaches to inhaled nitric oxide initiation and weaning. Measurements and main results: 16,087 patients were admitted to the CICU, PICU, and NICU, with 9,343 in the pre-inhaled nitric oxide pathway era from January 1, 2017 to June 30, 2020, and 6,744 in the post-pathway era from July 1, 2020 to December 31, 2022. We found a decrease in the percentage of CICU patients initiated on inhaled nitric oxide from 17.8% to 11.8% after implementation of the inhaled nitric oxide utilization pathway. We did not observe a change in inhaled nitric oxide utilization between the pre- and post-inhaled nitric oxide pathway eras in either the PICU or the NICU. Based on these data, we estimate 564 total days of inhaled nitric oxide, or about 24%, were saved over 24 months in association with the standard pathway in the CICU with associated cost savings. Conclusions: implementation of a standard pathway for inhaled nitric oxide use was associated with a statistically discernible reduction in total inhaled nitric oxide usage in the CICU, but no change in inhaled nitric oxide use in the NICU and PICU. These differential results likely occurred because of multiple contextual factors in each care setting. Abstract 9 is an online clinical investigation by Alexander et al. Prevalence, associated factors, and outcomes of severe acute kidney injury in pediatric acute liver failure, single-center retrospective study from 2003 to 2017. Objectives: our aim was to determine the prevalence and explanatory factors associated with outcomes in children with acute liver failure admitted to the PICU who also develop severe acute kidney injury. Design: retrospective cohort from 2003 to 2017. Setting: 16-bed PICU in a university-affiliated tertiary care hospital. Patients: admissions to the PICU with acute liver failure underwent data review of the first week and at least 90-day follow-up. Patients with stages 2 to 3 acute kidney injury using the British Association of Pediatric Nephrology definitions or receiving continuous renal replacement therapy or CRRT for renal indications were defined as severe acute kidney injury. We excluded acute liver failure cases on CRRT for hepatic-only indications. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: baseline characteristics, proportion with severe acute kidney injury, illness severity and interventions, and outcome, it asked transplant, survival with native liver, overall survival, duration of PICU stay, and mechanical ventilation. 94 children with acute liver failure admitted to the PICU were included. Over the first week, 29 had severe acute kidney injury, and another 8 received CRRT for renal or mixed renohepatic indications. Hence, the total severe acute kidney injury cohort was 37 of 94, or 39.4%. In a multivariable logistic regression model, peak aspartate aminotransferase, or AST, and requirement for inotropes on arrival were associated with severe acute kidney injury. Severe acute kidney injury was associated with longer PICU stay and duration of ventilation and lower spontaneous survival with native liver. In another model, severe acute kidney injury was associated with greater odds of mortality, with an odds ratio of 7.34, a 95% confidence interval of 1.9 to 28.28, and a p-value equal to 0.004. After 90 days, 3 of 17 survivors of severe acute kidney injury had serum creatinine greater than the upper limit of normal for age. Conclusions. Many children with acute liver failure in the PICU develop severe acute kidney injury. Severe acute kidney injury is associated with the time course of PICU admission and outcome, including survival with native liver. Future work should look at acute liver failure goal-directed renoprotective strategies at the time of presentation. This concludes the abstracts for the August 2024 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.